Welcome, welcome, welcome. You're listening to On Health and Healing with Angela Levesque. I'm very excited for my guest tonight. We have an amazing guest for you, David Wilcock, the host of Gaia MTV's Wisdom Teachings and the author of the Source Field Investigations. We'll be here tonight. I just want to mention that the show has been pre-recorded, so I will not be taking calls or having an interaction with you guys in the chat room as we usually do. But nonetheless, I would love to hear from you and hear your reaction on tonight's show. You can do that on Facebook at Hestia Health and also on Twitter at Hestia Health. So tonight, like I said, we're talking to David Wilcock. We're going to be talking about time, energy, consciousness, and where humanity is headed, which I think this is such an exciting time in history, and want to talk to my guest tonight and see how he feels about where we're headed and what his vision for humanity is. So if you need to get a hold of me at any time during the week, you can email me at angela@hestiahealth.com. And yes, do visit my website, Hestia Health, for all sorts of services and classes, all kinds of things. So next week, we will have Dr. William Walsh and Dr. Mensa, and we'll be talking about nutrient-based therapies for biochemical imbalances. You know, I love to talk about nutrition, and yes, it should be a great show. So tonight, again, as I mentioned, we have David Wilcock, which I'm very excited because I have been listening to him for years on Coast to Coast. You guys know I'm a Coast to Coast junkie. And, you know, he really did play a role in shifting my ideas of reality. And yes, so we have lots of great things to talk about tonight. You know, I do a lot of shows on consciousness and energy medicine because I think it matters. And I think it matters not only because I hope it's the future of our healthcare. I don't know if that's too idealistic or not, but also once we get it, once we shift our perception of the way the universe really works fundamentally, I think we really expand what is possible. And I think the limits of human potential all of a sudden become limitless. So I think it would do us a disservice. I know my show is on health and healing, and I have a very broad view of what healing is, but I think it would do us a disservice if we didn't talk about these kind of things, because I think it does change what is possible. You know, our healthcare, especially in this day and age, and even the way that we interact in our daily life is very reactionary. And once we appreciate what, as David would say, is that this organic and creative universe, and once we really understand that, not just intellectually, but really move through our life with the understanding that consciousness is first before matter, it does change our health. It does change the way that we interact on this planet with each other, and hopefully with the earth itself. So today we're talking about consciousness. We're talking about source field, time, gravity even, and hopefully helping my listeners out there to shift some more and shift the way our worldview and the way we look at health. So I'm going to ask David as well, as somebody who spent so much time studying the wisdom and the teachings of the past, where does he see our future? What is his utopian idea of what humanity would look like if we really embraced and understood all of these ideas that he teaches about? So with that, let me introduce David. David Wilcock is a professional lecturer, filmmaker, and researcher of ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. David is also the subject and co-author of the international bestseller, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and the author of The Source Field Investigations, The Hidden Science and Lost Civilizations Behind the 2012 Prophecies. David can also be seen every Monday night as the host of Wisdom Teachings on Gaia MTV. So with that, I am very excited to introduce David to the program. Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Angela. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Like I said, I've been a Coast to Coast junkie for years, and so I'm very excited to get to speak with you myself. So right now, you have a show on Gaia MTV, Wisdom Teachings, and we called it a nerding out night the other day with one of my friends, and we sat down and watched several of your episodes, and I just want you to share with my listeners what Wisdom Teachings is about and kind of why you started it.
Well, Wisdom Teachings is a show that is really a great thing for me because here's what's been happening. I've done probably 26, I think that's what we've counted, 26 all-weekend convergence events in the last 5 years, I guess. Convergence is the name that we have for these events, and 16 hours of material. But in those 16 hours, I'm not only going through all the stuff that's featured in the Source Field Investigations, which has over 1,000 academic references and presents a radical new model of the universe as a living cosmos, but we also have a lot of other stuff that is not in the Source Field book that goes into other areas, and a lot of it is built off of actually what is a series of intuitively revealed teachings called the Law of One material that came from a group of three people, one of whom was a physics professor, Dr. Don Elkins, who was asking the questions. Carla Ruckert was the channel, and then Jim McCarty was the scribe who was present in each session and also transcribed them after it was over. And these 100 sessions I first found in January 1996. And by that point, I'd already read 300 books on ESP and UFOs and Atlantis and paranormal subjects like poltergeists, whatever, Loch Ness Monster, Abominable Snowman, telekinesis, angels, whatever I could find. And I considered myself to know a lot, but then when I read these books, not only did it have a lot of things in it that I considered to be original private discoveries, there were many more layers to it, and a lot of it was almost incomprehensible. I would often spend 45 minutes without turning the page just meditating on what was said and trying to understand it and trying to figure it out. And I learned that reality was very much different than what most people are currently believing, in that the universe is essentially one infinite creator. There's an actual identity to the universe, and it's the biggest shift that we've ever had as a human civilization, because right now we think of life as this very rare exception to the rule that's out here in the middle of nowhere, and everything around us is dead. With this quantum shift in perspective, we now see that everything is alive, and that life is actually written into the basic background of quantum mechanics itself. So I wrote a book eventually about all this stuff and took all the science in the Law of One and was able to add meat to it, over 1,000 academic references, and that was the Source Field book. It was a New York Times bestseller for 3 weeks, peaking at number 16. After that happened, and even before that happened, I had this whole body of material that I kept giving that included what was in the book and other stuff. But I had a lot of people that would keep coming to my events over and over again, because they realized that, hey, I can't watch this once and understand it all. I'm going to have to keep, like, going deeper. And as a result of how many people would keep coming, I would always just keep cycling through material. So it ended up that even though I would present 16 hours, I had many, many, many more hours of material that I didn't actually end up using after a while, and it would just kind of cycle through. And sometimes I'd bring some of it back, but every show was a totally unique work of art, and it still is that way. So what I did is I started to go through all the discards and say, okay, what can I do with all this stuff? Because only, you know, maybe 100 people at a time are ever seeing this, and then it just disappears into my computer and it's gone. So then along comes Gaiam TV. Gaiam, of course, is the company that sells the yoga product Whole Foods. And I was offered the deal originally a year before I accepted it. Originally, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this because I got to bring all the content myself. I got to write my own shows. Basically, I got to be the show. They're not going to do a whole lot except give me a vehicle for this information to get out there. But then I was invited by Gaiam a year later to do George Norrie's program. And I said, well, you know, Norrie's great, and I've been on Coast, I don't know, 15 times. And it's certainly a nice thing to have a show with George and have that in my arsenal of sizzle reel, you know, for anything else I want to do. So I came out here to Boulder, which is where I am now, and ended up talking to him about it and realized, okay, this is actually a great idea because it is a job. It would be the first steady job I've had since 1998 where I actually can rely on some income instead of have to, like, constantly wonder where it's coming from. And that's part of what's kept me working so hard on the internet all these years is we are utterly dependent on the generosity of our audiences, as I'm sure you can easily relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to like watch my numbers on a daily basis almost in terms of who's buying my products, because although I had the opportunity to sell out, I never did. No back channel financing coming to me from any type of government agency or anything like that. I've had that offered and I've rejected it every time, because I want to have the freedom to say what I want to say and not be controlled by some shadowy Lucifer worshiping powers which are out there. And so I've rejected all that. So this was great because it's like a steady job, and it's not very much money, but it gives me enough that I can make sure that I have a place to live and that my basic needs are covered. And the more people subscribe, the more I can make from it. So there's that aspect to it as well. So what I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, if I've been given this opportunity and I do better if more subscribers come in, I'm going to make this absolutely the best it can be. Because people have always been saying to me, David, we love your stuff. We love your videos. When are you doing the next video? And I've only, from being crowdfunded and writing articles, I was only able to do maybe one video a year that was free on YouTube. And yet people, it's very easy to dash off a quick email from the comfort of your home and say, David, you got to do another video.
Yeah.
Quite different when you're actually having to self-finance, self-produce, self every part of the thing, from marketing to planning, distribution, all the slides, all the content, all the intellectual property, it's all coming from me. But then I realized, okay, there's actually this whole other area that I want to go into, which is the philosophy that comes out of the scientific model that I've developed, and that is not something that I've written about in either of the Source Field book. I have written about it to some degree in the new book, The Synchronicity Key, which we can talk about later, coming out August 20th of this year. But, the philosophy is a fascinating subject. The Law of One series only spent maybe 15% of its time talking about science, and 85% of the time was philosophy, and very specific spiritual teachings that are not exactly what you would expect. It's not as simple as what people would expect. There's a lot of subtlety, a lot of nuance to it, and I'm watching people who are metaphysically savvy and are hearing about various, they're aware of conspiracy theory, they're aware that extraterrestrials exist, they're aware even of some of the more exotic physics principles that I talk about in my books sometimes, but they're still having very poignantly difficult, painful experiences in their lives, and they're not being able to put all the pieces together. So what I'm doing is, I haven't threatened the intellectual property of my weekend conferences. Those are still the most amazing things I do. 16-hour download that will just leave everybody reeling and dazzled. There's a lot of discards. And so what I've done is I've taken those discards and I've developed them a lot more than I was ever able to talk about them at my conferences. And so the wisdom teachings does go through. Some of it is repeat of what I do at conferences, but then I can go into a lot more detail because it's a half an hour a week. And so I just finished episode 29 here in the studio.
Wow.
And so we're up to almost 30. And the biggest complaint we had on Amazon from the Source Field book was people saying that there was too much information and not enough discussion of what the information means. Well, that's all been changed with Wisdom Teachings, because now I'm able to zero in on particular topics and go into a lot more detail. And what I've really ended up doing with it is creating my equivalent of a disclosure. Like if I was going to be the government doing the formal disclosure to humanity about extraterrestrials exist, here's what they look like, here's their science, here's what they want us to know, the Wisdom Teachings episodes is the perfect form of that I've ever done in any form. And the people who are watching it are blown away. We're getting overwhelmingly positive comments. Hardly any criticism whatsoever. The only criticism we had is some people didn't like that I was reiterating content from a previous episode at the beginning of the next episode. But in some cases, audiences really like that. Like you mentioned, though, there's some people who are binge-watching. And then
yes.
They'll sit there and watch like 10 episodes in a row. Because you can sign up for a 10-day free trial, and then you can watch as much of what's there as you want free for 10 days. And people apparently will literally sit down and just power through like 10 or 12 episodes in a row. And in like some of the episodes where I talk about human ETs, and I've got all these incredible photographs of the gods, supposedly, that contacted all these ancient cultures around the world and what they looked like from the actual art and illustrations, and in some cases, physical remains behind from these cultures. Yeah, there were a couple episodes where I took the pictures of the gods and showed them again in later episodes. And if people are binge-watching, they say, well, I've seen that already. But, you know, it's a delicate balance. So since that happened, I've now, like, I'm reiterating a lot less. So that's only one little section. But the thing that's amazing, people, is how much diversity of content there is. I mean, how many of the episodes have you seen so far?
Well, I've seen about 8 or 9 of them. And I got to say, that was one of the things when I was preparing for this interview, because you talk about aliens and you talk about, you know, energy medicine and then gravity and time. And I was like, what the heck am I? You know, there's, you have such a wide range of things that you discuss that I was like, how I condense some of that into an hour interview. And so that was a big challenge for me. But I got to say that I liked, it's nice that you can go, because there were several of the shows that I listened to multiple times, because I was, okay, I kind of get that. And then I'd listen again and I was like, okay, that, I'm understanding it more. And then, because you talk about some pretty big concepts that I'm not sure, you know, that are very new to people.
Yeah.
It's not like on the show, and I read lots of books and lots of people are kind of saying the same things in maybe a slightly different way, but you're saying a lot of things that I've never heard of before. And so, and some pretty big, big concepts. So it's good to be able to listen to things over and over again.
Yeah, there's a lot of proprietary material that is totally unique to my research. And it just happens to be that because I have been financed by my audience, you know, all of what I do is geared towards building that content, because that's where my income comes from, is writing new articles and having new information. And the internet is very powerful. I mean, you can access so much information so quickly, and I can type as fast as I can talk, and I can talk at a at a verbally perfect level almost, with very few verbal pauses, so I can write final copy in one draft and be done. So there are whole articles that are very intricate on my website that I write in one day, and literally, I don't work on them for more than one day, except for the data gathering part, which I do every day. Every time I go online, I grab anything that I see that looks interesting, and I copy it and paste it into my journal. So then I access my journals periodically and audit them and put it all together. And a lot of what I do is just aggregation. I just aggregate information, and the Law of One has formed a background that's like the foundation of all this stuff. So really, even though it seems like I'm going off in all these different directions, there is a central underlying glue that brings it all together, and that is the real nature of the cosmos as explained in the Law of One. And instead of me playing take my word for it or take this channeled book's word for it, I say, hey, let's kick this thing around and see if we can actually use science to make sense out of this, because then that satisfies the left brain, which people really are hungry for. They don't want to just take your word for it. They want proof. And that's
what
I try to get.
That was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I know that you are an intuitive, and I know that a lot of these teachings are very much about the unification of, you know, the left and the right brain. But you, so much of what you're doing is, like you said, satisfying that left brain. And I think,
right,
I appreciate why we need to do that. But do you think that the ultimate message of material is about that unification, is about that wholeness and that oneness and understanding our connection?
Absolutely. The Law of One model, again, really is the basis of everything I've done. And then I ended up having an ET contact myself telepathically, and people might want to laugh at that, and many, many people have laughed at me online for various reasons, and sometimes they seem almost desperate to try to come up with a reason to discredit me, because I think a lot of people are really uncomfortable with the idea of there being an intelligence to the universe. There's a atheistic thread in our society that says, well, if God, or whatever you want to call it, we'll call it God for now, if God is out there, then why am I suffering? Why does my life suck? And why have these horrible things happened? And what we don't realize is that the universe gives us a lot more credit than we think we have. The universe gives us enough credit that it is completely willing to allow us to create the reality that we experience. The universe is willing to let us create whatever we want. But there's an underlying philosophy and a system to the universe, which is the universe is ultimately loving. Love is the tendency for the universe to want to reunify. The law of one actually defines gravity as love, and it's the tendency of the universe to come back into unity consciousness. Love is basically attractive force between people, and so love ultimately is how the universe is going to go from being multiplicity back to unity once again. And in the law of one, they explain that there is only identity. We are not separate individuals. In this third density, as they call it, which is not the same as the third dimension, just a density of the universe, a density of energy, like a plane of existence we live in. But in third density, we have this seemingly separate consciousness. And there's a lot of ways in which you can prove that it's not separate. For example, you can have people that are working on scientific discoveries on different parts of the planet, and they will start to share the data that they're learning with each other, but they don't realize that's what's happening. It's all telepathic. And as they're trying to solve these problems, they're accessing the information that other people are coming up with. And then you get this thing called the multiples effect, of which there have been hundreds of cases documented by 1922, where the similarity between thoughts people are having are so close that they actually file the patent almost simultaneously. And then there becomes a legal battle about who actually invented this, because they both try to patent it at the same time. In some cases, multiple groups try to patent the same thing at the same time, like the typewriter or the thermometer or the steamboat, calculus, decimal fractions, logarithms, sunspots, the law of conservation of energy. There's many, many examples. And it's really convincing that we are separate beings, because you have a mind that's partitioned from other minds. You're not going to automatically hear other people's thoughts if they walk in the room. If somebody's going to try to deceive you and stab you in the back, you might not realize it. But on some level, we do have this telepathic interplay. It's just that there's a boxing mechanism where the thoughts that are coming from the field are biased, so they appear to be our own thoughts, and we think that we're having separate thoughts. In the greater sense, if you're looking at another person, you're only looking at a reflection of yourself. Your identity is the cosmos. And with that comes the realization that any person you treat negatively is self-inflicted injury on yourself. And the universe believes this so strongly that it punishes you with karma if you don't treat people nicely. So, you know, we think of it as punishment. It's really not. It's balance. So in my book, The Synchronicity Key, I realized, okay, I looked at what happened with the Source Field book. I've seen people read it, and I've seen people read it and still be completely unaware of what I consider to be just like some of the basic stuff. Karma is one of the really base things, like, as you do unto others, so shall they do unto you, and vice versa. So when you start to realize that there is an absolute law of free will that's preserved in the universe, the law of one goes into way more detail than most people think by saying that this is happening on a global level. So if there's negativity happening behind closed doors in people's own homes, and they're abusing their children, maybe even sexually abusing their children, and then they go on thinking that they're good people and telling their kids, I'm just doing this because you need to learn about this stuff for when you get older and all that kind of thing. Well, no, I'm a good person. I mean, look, we know that convicted killers on death row still believe that they are good people and they've done nothing wrong. And whatever kind of hang-up the serial killer gets into, they justify it by saying, well, you know, I'm just trying to balance out these people who are so amoral, and I only killed people that were really bad people. You know? Very few killers or convicted murderers and so forth ever admit that they actually did something that hurt other people. But on a higher level, your soul knows. And so we attract experiences to balance the things that we've generated for others, and we balance it out in our own lives. And there's so many people who are completely unaware that they are actually in a system of absolute morals and absolute ethics. Your soul knows this. the higher beings know this, and it's also been allowed to occur on a collective level. We have evil governments. There's a secret cabal that is controlling the world primarily through banking and finance, the military-industrial complex, and control of the media. But they've, and a lot of people know that now, and it's become a lot more clear with the NSA disclosures. But people don't realize the amount to which this cabal has also tweaked science as well, and the social discourse, including the Darwinian theory. Charles Darwin's father was a 33rd degree Mason, so Darwin definitely seems to have been an insider. They kept it fairly well hidden, but his father didn't hide it. And the Darwinian theory says that the best killers are the most evolved on Earth. You want to be on the cutting edge of human evolution, you got to be the fittest, and that means you got to kill the best. So they've been doing that, and they enforced a model in our scientific discourse that suggests that the killers are the most evolved people on Earth, the law of the jungle. Well, it's not really true. You know, life is not the product of random mutation. Life didn't only occur on Earth. It's a galactic and universal blueprint. Wisdom teaching shows that in actually a lot more detail than in Sourcefield, because Sourcefield, the book, has more data, but Wisdom Teachings has way more explanation. And you really can hear me explain this in half an hour chunks. And as you said, some of this stuff is kind of complex and difficult to understand. You got to watch it a few times to really try to wrap your head around it. And the idea that the universe is a being, that it's a life form, and that it's all one mind. And ultimately, how we treat each other is really how far we progress. And then the next big thing that the Law of One tells us is that we are at a time of evaluation. We're not going to just, in the Law of One, reincarnation is a base part of the model of soul evolution. And in the Synchronicity Key, the new book coming out on August 20th, I actually show how Jesus was misquoted in the Bible through bad translation. And the whole concept that Jesus says you're going to hell, it's actually wrong. The word hell is Gehenna, and Gehenna was actually the garbage dump where they burned dead corpses and garbage in order to make sure that it would not putrefy and infect the land. So Gehenna, in the Sermon on the Mount, in the book of Matthew, Jesus says that even if you call your fellow brother or sister a fool, that you can go to Gehenna. Well, okay. Do you really think that Jesus would say that by simply giving somebody a small insult, which you see in any number of YouTube videos on the internet in the comments section, that all those people are going to hell? Well, if you believe that's what Jesus said, then that's what you're going to have to say, because you go back and read it and it's right there. And I give all the references in my book. Gehenna was a metaphor of karma. People say that they're burning all karma. That's exactly what Jesus meant by that. The word saved is sozo and soteria in Greek, and it means to be rescued from having to go through this again and again. Then the word eternity in the Bible is actually based on words like saeculum, and there's also plural words for eternity. And we show in the Bible that actually the word eternity can be used in many cases in the Old and New Testament for units of time that are much less than eternity as we now think of it. Units of time that could just be like the length of a king's life, for example. So the word that we now call eternity actually only means a cycle of a certain given length. So when Jesus says burn in hell for all eternity, what he really means is if you do this, you're going to go through a cycle of karma, because Gehenna actually means karma, not burning in hell. The burning is actually the burning off of the impurities that you acquire when you're not treating other people lovingly. So when we kind of get into the language of the Bible and we fix the damage, and this was done by a Bible scholar on a website called Bible Reality Check, and somebody who's very Christian, but, you know, reincarnation is taught in the Bible. It was one of Jesus' secret teachings. We know that he confided in Peter, the apostle, who then confided in St. Clement of Alexandria, and St. Clement then confided in this guy named Origen, and Origen is considered the founding father of Christian Church. So he had oral transmission from Jesus to Peter, to Clement, to himself, and that's a very short line of succession, And the most important secret teaching Jesus was giving the apostles, including Peter, was reincarnation. You're going to keep coming back and doing this again and again. So it doesn't mean that if you go to a church and you become a fundamentalist and you get baptized and you get quote-unquote saved, that means that you're just going to spend the rest of your life sitting on a cloud in heaven strumming a boring little harp that you can't even fret because it's just four strings on a gold frame. Very different. Jesus is saying, hey, you're going to have to keep reincarnating. And there's quotes in the Bible, survive the cut, where he clearly, like they're talking about, there's none greater than John the Baptist. And then they say, who was John before? And they say, some say he was Elijah the prophet. Some say he was Esaias. You know, some think he was this, some think he was that. Then there's a very important quote in the Bible where they ask, the apostles ask Jesus, oh, Master, who has sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus doesn't say, wait a minute, how could you say that he could have sinned before he was born? Right? Because if Jesus didn't believe in reincarnation, he'd be like, what are you talking about? He was just born for the first time. He says, no, it was the works of God be made manifest in him. So what that says is, yes, he was born blind to work off karma, and by losing his physical sight, he would turn inward and look for the wisdom of the universe more. And a lot of times we find out that's what's happening. So I kind of went back to some of the stuff that for me is like really obvious, like obviously we reincarnate, obviously we have karma, obviously synchronicity is being used to help us awaken. I've been having synchronicity all my life, and especially since probably 1990 or 91, around that time, especially after I stopped using all mind-altering substances in September 1992, it's just been one synchronicity after another. So anyway, I've kind of gone off in a lot of directions. I'm sorry if it's too much of a monologue. But.
No, that's okay. I know probably a lot of people listening to you talk about the misinterpretation of the Bible will be very uncomfortable for them. But it's interesting that there's so many things coming up in this. So many things are being uncovered, and we're seeing the core of the of truth in many circumstances. And I just want to ask you, why do you think this time is a special time for humanity, or is that just us being, you know, egocentric?
The benefit of figuring out that Jesus' secret teaching was reincarnation, you know, people might not like it, but think about it this way. Do you want to believe in the teachings of a cult, or do you want to believe in the teachings of Christ? Which one do you want? Because the cult is what's been foisted upon you by the Roman government when they created the Catholic Church. And they did this for political repression. They told you that you were only going to be born once and you would die once, and if you don't get saved, you burn in hell for eternity. They deliberately concocted this because then people pay government money. They tithe to the church, which is the government after 720 AD in the iconoclasm. They tithe to the church so that the church makes more money by making you feel that you're going to burn in hell if you don't go along with what they say. And they tell you that anybody who does not believe the way you do is an infidel, and this allows them to make war because people say, well, heck, these people aren't saved. They're going to burn in hell all eternity anyway. Why not torture them now? And what I'm saying is, look, if you realize Jesus is teaching reincarnation, then ultimately all religions start to look a lot more alike. Christianity is one of the only religions where the teaching of reincarnation got excised for political purposes only. And then when you get to the core of it, it's like, okay, let's go back to all the other good stuff that the Bible said and see where the truth is. And one of the major things that the Bible talks about, like in the book of Matthew, two shall be walking and then there will be one, right? This whole idea of the harvest, which is a term that's extensively used in the book of Matthew. Jesus is described, he's actually making a parable saying that at the end of the age, that wicked will be plucked out from the earth one by one. And that, you know, there will be a dividing like into two different timelines. And there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that suggests ascension. Jesus himself goes through crucifixion and resurrection. And in resurrection, he becomes a being of light. And obviously, he's attained a whole different level because he already, you know, supposedly resurrected Lazarus, right? So Bringing somebody back, the dead, back into their body, he's been there, done that. The ascension was a whole other thing. He's not just coming back into the dead body. He's coming back into a light body. He's transitioned into the next level of human evolution. And the Catholic Father Tiso went over to Tibet to observe people going into light body, what they call rainbow body. They have a teaching that says that when all of the thoughts that you think can become love, and no thought in your mind is other than love, then you're ready to transition into this next level of human evolution. And in Tibet and China alone, they have over 160,000 documented cases of people reaching this rainbow body. And it turns out that all the different ancient teachings around the world start to sound an awful lot like Christian prophecy, because they all said that we were going to go into a golden age, that it would happen at the end of a cycle that's basically this 25,000-year wobble in the earth. And that at the end of the 25,000-year cycle, we walk into a golden age. So there is something very special and very unique about the time that we're in right now because of those prophecies.
So I wanted to ask you then, if people finally understood all of these things that you're talking about, and not just intellectually, but really understood them, how do you think when somebody wakes up, what does their day look like if we're all kind of ascending into these light beings? How do we still go to work and watch our favorite reality TV program, God help us, on TV, or what does our day look like?
Well, I think that there is a transitional phase. In the Law of One, they say there's a 100 to 700 year transition period, and it's been a long subject of scholarly debate as to whether the Law of One says there's a spontaneous change or a gradual change. Now, I fell in love with the spontaneous model. I loved the idea that on December 21st, 2012, bam, we'll just get busted into some new layer of reality.
I was hoping for
walking around
that.
With light bodies. A lot of people hoped for that, and I prepared for it. I mean, I went to Canada, and I spent most of the money that I had meditating in the forest, in the mountains, in the lakes, in the streams. I did not worry about my website. I did not worry about generating new income. I just cut loose and said, here I am, and I'm just going to be in nature. Because I said, if this thing's going to happen, if there's going to be some kind of dimensional shift, then there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that could be what happens. If that's what's coming, then I want to be ready for it. And there was no apparent change as of December 21st, other than, as I said, I ended up having an accident and breaking my toe and had extremely powerful pain and had to walk around on crutches, actually hobble on crutches, and keep it elevated. And that to me was kind of like a message saying, okay, you're still in pain. And it was very obvious because I'm in pain all the time. And now I'm in the post-2012 reality. It's like, shit, this is my reality. I'm in pain. And I wrote an article very soon after that you can read on my website, divinecosmos.com, called December 21st, 2012, Romance and Reality. And in that article, I compare and contrast the romance of 2012, which was, boom, we all just go into a cosmic orgasm, and everything just turns into some ascended world. And the reality is, okay, it didn't happen that way, at least not yet. Maybe it still will. And if it does, hey, I'm ready. I'm excited. But now I have to go back to the books and look in more detail. I had a book to write for Penguin, which I hadn't finished at all. In fact, only about a fifth of it had been written by the end of the Mayan calendar. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, I got to write this book now. And I don't have very much time. So the last 6 months of my life since the Mayan calendar end date have just been absolutely the busiest I've ever been, because I've created what I feel to be an incredibly powerful 500-page book. A very worthwhile sequel to Sourcefield, with nearly 700 academic references, lots of quotes from the Law of One, lots of philosophy, all this stuff I said about Jesus, the whole explanation of who we are as souls, where we go after we die, the stages of the afterlife that we go through, why are we reincarnating? Because if let's just assume that this is true, that Jesus is saying that you reincarnate. Jesus is trying to give you the teachings that will escape the mill of having to keep coming back and redo this. Because I don't know about you, but I'm done. I'm not going to reincarnate and play this game again. I want to get the next level. So what do? Well, you need to live your life as a virtuous person. Law of One series, they say there is a next level of human evolution, but you've got to be at least a little bit over 50% service to others, meaning loving and caring and supportive and forgiving and respectful and, you know, nice to other people, as opposed to service to self, where you are shaming, humiliating, disrespectful, and controlling and dominant, manipulative towards other people. So as long as you're just slightly more loving than evil in your daily life, you could be 49% evil, which means that a lot of people are going to say, yeah, you're really kind of a jerk. You know, but as long as you're a little bit more of a nice person than a jerk, you're still not going to have to reincarnate in third density as we go through this change. And it appears from the latest Law of One quotes I'm looking at that you reach the end of your life, you die a natural death just like you normally would, because everybody's going to die someday. And then once you've died your natural death, you reincarnate into this new plane of existence that the Earth is going into, that is the fourth dimension or fourth density. And once you get there, you have a light body, you have all the powers that Jesus had and more, which he promised you was going to happen in John 14:12. He said, as I do these things, so shall you do them, and greater things. For I go unto my Father, which is the consciousness of the universe, the one infinite creator. By accessing that and realizing you are the creator, you are the universe, the mind of the universe is your mind, that then becomes an automatic chain of logic that says, yeah, of course I want to be nice to other people and love people because they are me. Why would I want to be mean to myself? So it's some pretty basic intrinsic wisdom, and there's a set time that a planet is expected to go through the chaos and misery of being third density, where people are blowing up bombs and setting off chemical weapons and, you know, destroying the environment and polluting and fighting wars and doing all these horrible things. Planets are only expected to go through that for so long before they go into this more harmonious realm. In the Law of One terms, they say that fourth density, you have a body that's much more composed of light. It's impossible to create disharmony. There's instant telepathic communication. You can fly. You can levitate objects. You can create objects out of thin air with your mind. You can fast forward and rewind linear time like a video cassette. You have the time travel capability. You can move through time like you're flipping pages in a book. And this is where we go. But the really cool thing is, as I was in Canada and as I was finishing the new book, Synchronicity Key, I realized that there were some quotes in the Law of One that I had never seen before. I totally missed, because it was all the way up at like session 64 out of 106. And I hadn't really worked up that much very often in my reads, at least not since the late 1990s. And then the whole 2012 thing had become much more personal since then. When I went back and looked at it for the book, I found that there were quotes that clearly said that we will start acquiring ascended abilities while we are still in our physical body. So you don't make a full transition. You're not fully ascended yet. You're not literally the being of light yet. But you start to develop those fourth density abilities in much the same way that the Tibetan masters, before they go into rainbow body and they turn into this rainbow-colored energy being, they're doing some pretty incredible stuff before then, including Lungam, where these guys can run and jump like, you know, 30 feet high and 300 feet through the air each time that they take one step. And they're doing telekinesis and they're doing, you know, all kinds of really great stuff before they hit rainbow body. So I think that part of what's happening is that we're going to start seeing more and more of that happening. So then that gets into the real core of your question, which is, did anything actually change after the end of the Mayan calendar? And it's taken a while, but there have been some pretty significant changes that have started to happen. It's almost like it was 6 months late. But the NSA disclosure with Edward Snowden and all this stuff is starting to tumble out. It's a little bit late, but there's a lot of other things that are harbingers of building up to this. And I do believe that there is an alliance of you know, many, many nations, including cooperating with patriotic elements in the U.S., in the military structure of the U.S., including the intelligence agencies, including the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Pentagon. A lot of them are on board with this. They know that our economy has been hijacked by international bankers who are Lucifer worshippers in many cases, not all cases, but they've been able to control the media, the financial system, the military-industrial complex to a large degree, and they've been faking wars and faking terrorism to get people to turn against each other, and then they finance both sides of the war, so whoever wins, they win. But there's a huge insurrection against them. And I do believe that Edward Snowden's whistleblower disclosures about the NSA was not a single isolated event. I do believe that whether he actually is part of the alliance or whether it's just a happy accident because the physics is changing, there are many other clues, and I'm summarizing them now on my website. And by the time this show airs, they will all be out there on my website, articles that I'm writing in the series called The Nightmare is Almost Over, and that's free for everybody to read. And there's probably going to be at least three parts to The Nightmare is Almost Over before it's finished. But we're watching a whole sequence of data points suggesting that quietly this insider alliance has been arresting the banks and outing all the little things that are being done so that gradually the public is learning the truth. But they're learning it at a speed that's slow enough that the cabal can't hit back by creating a world war or mass atrocities, or nuclear strikes, or any of this kind of nasty stuff they've tried to do. We are seeing an evolved world starting to come into being. And here's the bottom line. I believe that as we learn the truth, the basic laws of physics change. Some of the top insiders in the government who I've worked with have told me that one of the highest classified secrets is that the laws of physics are observer-dependent. You have somebody who could levitate a ball bearing with their mind, and you're going to see this little ball bearing hovering around the room. If you put somebody else in the room who doesn't believe that that ball bearing could levitate, the levitator loses the ability to do it, or if they can do it at all, they're going to have a great deal of difficulty. And if you've ever heard of the Russian psychic Nina Kalagina, they filmed her doing telekinesis, and she was able to move like a salt shaker around through a bunch of matches with her mind.
Wow.
You see her moving her hands around it. But if skeptics were in the room and they said, I don't believe she could do that, if she could do it at all, it took her much more effort. She'd get migraine headaches, all kinds of stuff. So there's an observer effect where the laws of physics are dependent on the participants in the laws. And how you think the universe works determines what happens. So a very valuable part of this ascension process is uncloaking the secrets and revealing what has been hidden from us, because we're learning, and probably people listening to your show, Angela, are a lot more ahead of this than many other people out there. You're learning that you've been lied to. And in fact, everything that you've been raised in is a lie. The television is lying to you. The commercials are lying to you. The educational system is lying to you. The government is lying to you. And the real truth is so much different than the lie that most people's reference frame is totally blown because they can't even relate to the truth. It's so outside of what they think is real. Well, I'm an atheist, you know. There's no God, you know. Not true. Universe is an intelligent, loving being, and synchronicity is being used to awaken people on a personal level of that. So I believe that as the cabal is exposed and as the lies crumble, people realize, hey, the world is not what we think. That starts changing the laws of physics, which then releases, if you will, like an energetic clamp that's been holding us back from being able to start developing these, in law of one terms, fourth density or ascended capacities within our physical bodies.
Well, we actually have about 5 minutes left. I wanted to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
So do you think that, you know, with all of this stuff with the banking system and all of the uncovering of the data mining and all of that, and then at the same time, we seem to have this exponential spiritual growth. Do you think those are happening, you know, kind of parallel, or do you think that growth is happening in response, or is it born out of the fact that, you know, there are these kind of evil masterminds trying to, you know, trick us? Like you said, everything is a lie. Do you think that exponential growth in spirituality is in response to that? Or do you think that would have happened?
Actually,
anyway?
No. I actually believe, and this really, it's a great segue to what the new book is about, because once you've read the new book and once other people start to become aware of what I've really done here, it's a big game changer. in the new book, I'm actually showing how wars and major events in history are repeating in extremely precise cycles of time, even across ages of the zodiac. Like events in the age of Aries in Rome are repeating in the age of Pisces in American history, in some cases down to just a few weeks' margin of error. Same wars, even Watergate. I show that Carter was Cato the Censor, that Nixon was Scipio Africanus. They actually look just like the people they used to be. The same exact political scandal as Watergate happened in Roman history, where Scipio Africanus was indicted for trading with the enemy to end the war early. He was bribed, and then he ripped up the books and refused to acknowledge that he had done this. But in so doing, he basically resigned before he was going to go through the equivalent of impeachment, exactly like Watergate. I show that Hitler is exactly the same as Hannibal in Roman history. They did the same wars. They went through the same parts of Europe during the same times. They marched through the Alps. Hannibal had elephants. Hitler had tanks. And if you look at a picture of Hannibal and compare it to Hitler, it's the same guy. Hannibal is Hitler with a beard. And I found this actually, oh, it's amazing. So then what we find out is that there is a script to historical events. It's called The Hero's Journey. I learned it in Hollywood by screenwriting and finding out that every story that you tell in a film has to follow the same structure, which is a hero. There's a central main character who has a series of obvious flaws that you have to make very obvious at the beginning. Then the hero gets a quest. There's something they want more than anything else, but the only way they're going to be able to achieve that quest is to drop their flaws. The flaws are what stand in the way of them getting their goal. And so, like, if you have somebody who's in a romance and they want to be loving, but then they have to drop their fear of intimacy in order to find love, that's a classic example of what I'm talking about. So this hero's journey archetype is the story of Christ, story in every major religion. It's the story that's in every film. The more a film tells a story, the more accurately the archetype is expressed, the better the film does financially, and there are computer equations that can prove that. But I also show that the structure is written into history, and history is going through this structure in very even cycles. So the story has a happy ending. That's why people want to see a happy ending in a movie. We instinctively know that's where it's going, that there is a happy ending. So in The Synchronicity Key, the whole second half of the book is an absolute tour de force of proving that history is cyclical. Nobody's going to be able to dispute the data. It's way too hardcore. But well, I do it in a nice, measured fashion. And what it shows is that these bankers being exposed is all part of a scripted story that is leading to the Golden Age, to their defeat, and to a mass awakening. So none of this stuff is random. It's all happening by an intelligently designed script that's part of the intelligence of the galaxy, the sun, and the earth, moving through very organized cycles that are driven and built to drive us into a golden age and create a mass public awakening on a worldwide level.
All right, David. Well, we only have a minute left, so your book comes out August 20th, is that right?
That's
correct. The
Synchronicity
Key. And my listeners can hear you every Monday night at 7 p.m. on Gaia TV. I want to thank you so much, David, for being on the show. It was just, it's always fascinating.
Well, I thank you. And I think we managed to cram a lot of stuff into 1 hour. That's compressing time. That's how we do it.
All right. Well, thank you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
All right. Again, that is David Wilcock, and you can hear him on Ghanaian TV at 7 p.m. Next week, we are talking about nutrient-based therapies and biochemical imbalances. Coming up next is Midnight Meditations. You can hear me every week at Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern right here on AtoZen.fm. This is Angela Levesque wishing you good night and good health. See you next week.